Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Chronicles of a Favorite Woman. My name is Lucina Kirkendall, and it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be here tonight. When I think of the goodness of Jesus and all he has done for me, my soul cries out, hallelujah, thank God for saving me. I just want to thank everyone from tuning in, those who are in the United States and outside of the United States. I am just so excited. When I think, you know, when you think people are not watching you, they are watching you. And I'm just appreciative of all those who are coming in. I'm coming in on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm also coming on my Facebook Live. You all know I don't start the show without prayer, so let's just go right into it. So, Father, in the name of Jesus, we just thank you and we praise you. We give you the honor and we give you the praise. You are worthy to be praised. You are our peace of Prince of Peace, our Comforter, our Provider. I thank you for being Jehovah Jireh, the one who does provide. I thank you for being our Jehovah Nisi. Lord, I thank you. I thank you for being our Jehovah Rophe, the Lord God that heals thee beyond all understanding. And Lord, as we go through this night, I thank you for allowing me to reach out to the men, because, you know, we talk about women all the time, but our men are out there too, and they have things that they go through. They have testimonies. So I thank you for dropping it in my heart. And I thank you as I move forward being your vessel. Thank you for allowing me to be your servant. I serve you and being your servant, Lord. And Lord, as we move forward tonight, I humble myself, Lord, and ask for forgiveness for anything I've done before I put it to the throne of your grace. And so now that I have, and I thank you for forgiving me, I thank you for your peace beyond all understanding. I ask you that you decrease. I decrease Chyna, and I invite your Holy Spirit to come in. That I thank you for those who are listening on live and also who will catch the replay, that this message tonight will be a helpful and a nugget of wisdom, a testimony that will ignite that spark for others who may be going through or know of others going through. I ask you and I thank you for the speaker that's coming on tonight. I pray over him and his family that you will touch him and bless him beyond all measures, beyond what he expects. And it's in Jesus' name we ask and pray. Amen. So as I mentioned before, thank you for those who are coming in. I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. I'm so excited because I remember when someone came to me and told me, you know, Chyna, you talk about a lot of females, but we have, you know, as men, we go through as well. And I said, you know what, that resonated. And in the middle of the night, I lied to you not, middle of the night, I knew that the month of March was coming in, and he gave it to me. God gave it to me, March Men Mayhem. And I'm so excited that we've already done show one of four where we talked about why men cheat, and that was Mr. Thomas Wade, an explosive and powerful, powerful conversation. I am still getting messages about that conversation. So if you haven't seen it and listened to it, I promise you, you'll get something out of it. Tonight, it will be no different. Tonight, we talk about, you know, oftentimes we go through things in life. You know, we go through our good, we go through our bad, we go through, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly. But throughout it all, I tell people, trust the process. Trust the process, because we can't go around it, we can't go above it, we can't go under it, we have to go through it. And this brother that's coming on tonight is someone that I'm very fond of. We go years and years and years back, and I'm just grateful and feel blessed to have him come out here and share. And the title, Free to Be Me. How many of us be in bondage? Whether it's something that was done to us or things that we allowed to have done to ourselves. But when you get that freedom, when you get that purpose, when you get that understanding, it is nothing better than that. I tell people, a peace of mind is priceless. And if you don't have it, get it. And once you get it, you're going to fight like Hades to keep it, because I let no one disturb my peace of mind. And I mean that. I set the boundaries, And I'm just looking forward to bringing on my my brother, my friend, my brother in Christ, Mr. L. Ron Pringle. Thank you for accepting the invitation for this phenomenal month that we're having. I appreciate you, and I welcome you to Chronicles of a Favorite Woman. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Yes.
And a great pleasure to chat with you.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I'm just looking forward to it. You know, that when we have everybody on the air, you know, everyone knows us that we just have a comfortable environment. So we're just going to kick it. That's all we're going to do. We're going to kick it and just drop jewels and nuggets of wisdom. Because the truth of the matter is, I've learned from my, you know, with me stepping up, the power of my voice. You know, people feel like they haven't gone through or feel like they're alone and no one understands what they're going through. And when I started communicating, when I started going on different platforms, I realized, you know, I'm not the only one. It felt so good to know I was not the only one. And so, and I'm sure with you as well, because look, we've been on this earth for a long time now. We have been through, we have endured, we've learned some life lessons, and now
we're
here to share our testimony. We're here to share our testimony because we have people out there, we have brothers out there who feel like they're alone, you know, as men. You know, sometimes, you know, men are taught, you know, you keep your business to yourself, you know, and you can't cry, you know, grown men don't cry, you know, things like that. But the truth of the matter is you all hurt just like we hurt, you know, as females hurt. We hurt as well. And thank you for coming in. So three questions I'm going to ask of you. Who are you? What do? And why do you like doing what you do?
Well, thank you. I love what you said there, you know, with women and how they come out. And one of the things that they would say is, you know, they're not alone. And that a lot of women find comfort in that. To whereas me as a man, you know, that wouldn't be quite the term that I kind of grew up with and what I would tell myself. What I would tell myself is I'm not first. And I won't be the last.
I like that.
And the downside to that is that you're still continuing alone.
Mm.
You haven't accepted the fact that you're not alone. But it's just your masculinity telling you, hey, listen, forget about it. You're not the first person this happened to. You're not going to be the last person this happened to. So deal with it. And that's not, I've learned that that was not the not the best thing to tell yourself.
So
I'll answer your three questions before we, you know, get into real conversation here.
Yeah,
but Ron Frank, I am but no, Ron Pringle, I'm a country kid from South Carolina, from the low country out in Ridgeville. And born and raised out there, left home at 17 and went into the United States Air Force. After I came home from the Air Force, had a very tough transitional period and got into the world of food banking and serving and have really committed myself to that life of service and feeding others and making sure that others had enough. And has kind of grown up the network and now, you know, 23, 24 years later, I am the president and CEO of a Feeding America Food Bank here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And there's no greater joy in what I do because this is, it really feels like a life of service. When you're able to see so many families who are so appreciative, you know, whose faiths have been fulfilled, whose miracles have come true, simply because you're doing your job and you're doing what you're supposed to do and ensuring that they have what they need. And that just has been a selfish act of mine because I get the most joy out of it. Because at the end of the day, you know, I get that feel-good feeling and knowing that I've helped to change someone's life. And so it's just been a joy to be able to do this for so many years and still be at it.
Exactly. So that is definitely awesome, you know, doing a selfless act of serving, just being a servant. And it's so funny, that's how we met. Serving.
Yeah, absolutely.
and we were serving at the same food bank, you know. And here it is, you know, years later. Gosh, I don't even know how many years it's been. It's been a minute. It has been a minute.
Been
and we're both still, yeah, we're both still serving, you know. And what better way? How does it make you feel being that servant, you know, knowing that you're making a difference in people's lives?
It's rewarding. You know, there's so many families and kids that I would never, ever meet that I know have the ability to be a kid, have the ability to feel good because they brought food home and try their very, very best to have a normal life, you know, simply because of whatever we went through today to get it done. And have it there. And I kind of, you know, understand how that feels and what that affects and that possibility of what that child may be facing simply because of my journey and how I even got into this field. You know, and so I, you know, tell people my story with, you know, how I got into food banking. And, you know, growing up, my mother passed away when we were very young. I was 12 years old, and my dad was left with four kids, and my mom passed away at 36 years old, and so it was very tough for him, losing a wife, young wife, and now you have four small children that you have that responsibility of, you know, and commitment to, and so it was a very challenging time that I look back now on his, what he must have been going through. And know that it had to have been difficult for him. And it was so mentally draining on him that, you know, it was hard to keep a job and stay focused, you know. And so we kind of grew up with some challenging times there. But luckily, out in the country, I grew up right next to my grandmother. And my grandmother knew of a place called the Food Trust. And so I would go with her down to the food trust, and we would pick up food for everyone in the neighborhood. So me and my cousins and my sisters, all of us would have, you know, have food on our tables. And so I had that opportunity to do what kids do and be a child. I was able to hope, dream, and play and not have to worry about where a meal was coming from because food was always there. And it came from that food bank. And so fast forwarding years later, when I started at the food bank, I started out as a warehouse associate, and a young man, Archie McCree, gave me an opportunity and said, I'm going to give you an opportunity. And going out with him one day, I witnessed him giving a speech to a company or whatever civic group, and he was talking to them and talking about how important the food bank was and how he was raising money to make sure that food was there so when families come, they'll be able to have food. And then he began to tell a story. And he started talking about a single mom and a single parent that's, you know, raising kids all on their own and how the food bank, you know, makes sure that they have food for their children. And it dawned on me that this man was telling my story. And it was, wow, here, all these years later, he's telling my story that happened to me so many years prior. And then when I started thinking about it and started talking to him and getting to know him, it really became an eye-opener because he was the one in 1986 that was there speaking on my behalf so that when my grandmother came to the food bank, food was there. And he was the one that gave me my first opportunity in the world of food bank.
Yes.
And so he and I still stay in touch, and I tell him I'm working every day now to pay him back for that opportunity that he gave me.
Yes. I love Miss Archie. I just, and like you, I stay in touch, probably not as much as you, but He is a phenomenal man. He is a phenomenal. He doesn't just talk, he walks it as well. And he's one of the reasons why I became so strong of an advocate myself. So I could definitely concur what you're saying because he is phenomenal. So shout out to Mr. Archie McCree because he is truly, truly a gem. Truly a gem.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, you know, going out with your grandmother, I tell you, it's not my mom, grandmama, because that's who raised me. I'm a country girl, too, from the Pineville area and Charleston area. And, you know, but I tell you, if it wasn't from the grandmama prayer, if it wasn't from my grandmama prayer, let me tell you something, I would have been gone a long time ago because, you know, you just mentioned that, you know, your mom died at such an early age and so your dad was left being a single father, you know, not by choice. And I'm sure those were challenging times. And when I hear you talk, when you came into the conversation, the first thing, you know, when we were talking about, you said, you know, it ain't going to be the first, and it's not going to be the last. Deal with it. And as a result of that, you know, let's start from that point there. You know, it's not going to be the first, it's not going to be the last, but yet you're still dealing with issues.
Yeah, because I'm not the first and I'm not the last, you know, but I finally am able to kind of deal with these issues here now, not alone.
Right.
You know, and understanding more about these issues because, you know, you never saw them as issues. You know, as a man, you kind of saw them as your way of life. This is how we were taught to live. This is how we were taught to, were conditioned to be the man of the house or the head of the household or, you know, to be the tough ones, you know, to be the shoulder to cry on and, you know, to be that protector, you know, to take the hits, take the blows. And this is what we were taught and kind of conditioned. And so what you really are not taught is, well, how do you handle those blows?
Mm.
What do you do with those tears that are on your shoulders? How do you carry the burden of someone else when you have your own?
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I wrestled with for such a long time. And, you know, for me, it kind of, I'm able to look back now and kind of see how this has transpired in my life because it wasn't something I always was aware of. And when I found out about it, and when I was, you know, I guess people would say when you see yourself in the mirror for the first time,
right?
That's when it really hit, and that's where the guilt came in. That's where the depression came in. That's where the desire not to be here came in. It's because you saw yourself for who you think or thought you were. You look back and you see the damage that you've done, the people that you've hurt, and it becomes a burden. It becomes a weight. It becomes guilt that you don't even know how to talk about, how to even express it. Because who would believe you?
Mm-hmm.
Who would genuinely believe you? Who would think that? Because all of these people throughout your life got to know you as that person.
Mm-hmm.
If you hurt their feelings, they got to know you as the person that hurt their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult for them to see you as the person that wasn't intentional when they hurt your feelings. It wasn't on purpose, but it was a defense mechanism to keep buried and not express what it was you're really feeling, not to let anyone get close enough to you so that you can feel that way again. You know, and so that was something that I wrestled with and continue to wrestle with, you know, because, you know, it's really had an impact on me for the past couple few years, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, would you say that, okay, because you said quite a few things, and gosh, you hit the nail on the head. You know, we take on You know, it's nothing more realistic is when you finally look at yourself in the mirror. Like, really get a good look at yourself. For me, it was like, you know, going through so much, I finally had to just stop and let the dust settle. And when I finally let the dust settle, I asked, well, one thing I did was I asked God to show me. And that was a loaded question. What he revealed to me, whoo, I didn't like that. I didn't like it because I was saying to myself, I can't believe I've been doing this. But like you, I can understand. It is a defense mechanism. I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. So for me, I was always guarded. I didn't understand boundaries. So I became clingy, you know, for people that I'm cool with or who I felt I took as family. I became clingy, you know, and then I would make a mountain out of a molehill because I had a control issue. It was a lot. It was a lot. But when I started seeing, or when that reality came to me that I was hurting people, I didn't realize I was hurting people. I was just trying to make sure I don't get hurt. And
we just
when I had to, you know, I just had to make sure I wasn't hurt. So people would never understand me. And I was like, you know, why am I so different, Lord? Why? He was like, I made you unique for a reason. You know, I made you unique for a reason. You got to go through. And it's called trusting the process. But going back to you, you know, that guilt. I understand when you look in the mirror, you got to deal with the guilt. And then when you come to that realization of the guilt, you start tapping into it. Now, some people do it slowly. Some people don't do it slowly. But when you start doing it and you go back to the people that you've hurt, because people will see you for what they know you were, not for what you are now. And some people still hold on, you know, hold on to the past. Do you run into that?
You do. You run into that. And it's been a, you know, a painful part because, and it kind of made me think about, you know, men and mental health and how other people, you know, kind of overlook the signs when we do try to reach out or we do try to ask for some type of help, you know, with them not understanding because of that pain they feel and them not wanting to believe that you're unintentional, you know. When you begin to talk about your feelings and begin to say, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me or I don't know why I'm like this or, you know, and then someone tells you back and they come back at you and say, yes, it is. You know what you're doing. Stop bringing up the past. The past doesn't have anything to do with this. And once again, it becomes one of those stereotypical things that men go through because women, as you mentioned earlier, there are things that happen in your childhood that affected you in your adult life. Women can understand that among women. But it was very difficult for me to, you know, I've met very few women that understood that that happens to men as well. You know, it's almost as if they can, if it's validated, then they accept it. If it's not validated, then they can't accept it. Or if they've been hurt by it, they can't accept it. And so what that in turn does, well, that man then has to continue to internalize that. He has to continue to deal with that. He has to continue to hold that and to carry that. And that has, you know, made it even the more challenging. And for me and how it kind of came out, carrying that became such a burden. You know, I committed myself to work and serving and that's one of the signs of depression that I didn't even realize. You know, for all these years, I just threw myself into work and distanced myself from social interactions. You know, not really connecting to anyone personally, not letting anyone really get in. And you justify it because you're working, I'm serving, I'm giving back, and this work is important. You know, and so when I decided to walk away from it a few years back, I had nothing to do but deal with it. So now all of these emotions, all of these things are starting to come up in your mind, and you're just kind of wrestling with it, and you're carrying this weight. And so instead of dealing with it, when you feel like there is no outlet to deal with it, there's really not anybody you can talk to that's going to understand it, because you really don't know what's going on. You really don't, you know, can't put words together to even explain the feelings that you're having, you know. So for me, it was very difficult to even define feelings. Now, I know the definition of them. You know, I know Webster's definition of them, but to put that definition to what I was actually feeling was something that I had to learn how to do. It was easy to describe anger. It was easy to describe fear. You know, those are some of the common ones and things like that, that everybody kind of, I can see that you're upset, or I can see that you're angry. But when someone's depressed, can you see that they're hurting? Can you see that painful experience? Can you, those are the things you can't see. Those are the things that, you know, those traditional words and definitions just can't, you know, just give way to, if you will. And what did I do? Well, I threw myself back into work because that was easier.
Yeah,
it was easier to say, you know what, I'm not the first, I'm not the last. Suck it up, deal with it, move on. There's work that needs to be done. You're supposed to lead. You're supposed to, you have a responsibility. And I threw myself back into work. And I think that first moment was when God was like, hey, let's talk. But I didn't know what to say. And I wasn't patient enough to listen.
When did that moment come?
So I threw myself back into work.
And
I threw myself back into work, and I started going again. And and what started happening was I started having these panic attacks, these little panic attacks. And just coming out of the blue here, not knowing what was happening. And one day I was having one, and my sister happened to call. And I was talking to her and was telling her what I was experiencing. And, you know, I'm kind of breathing heavy and having all of these nervous antics and feelings here and just pacing back and forth. And she was like, was there, is anybody there you can call? Because she's out of town. And she was like, do you have anybody there that you know that you can call? And so I'm like, well, yeah, I got a veteran buddy of mine that I'm just going to give him a call. And I called him and started talking to him. And he and I started talking about some of the things that he went through when he was, when he served. And I began having those conversations with him about some things that I went through in serving. And that's when he said, you know what? You need to call the crisis hotline and find someone there to talk to. I hung up the phone, I called the crisis hotline, they set me an appointment up for that next day, and that was a Monday morning. So I went in to see my doctor that Monday morning. We had a conversation. We tried to set up some type of schedule to have some other things done. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting started. That Thursday morning, I woke up, I got out of bed, and I walked from my bedroom to my bathroom. I was completely out of breath. Couldn't understand what was going on and why I was breathing so heavy like I just ran a marathon. Sat down for a few minutes. Things went back to normal. So I'm like, okay, well, let me get up, go downstairs, get dressed. Made it downstairs completely out of breath. And my thought then was, I need to go to the doctor. But hard-headed, we men, you know, as soon as the moment you start feeling better, you're okay. So I said, I'm going to go to the office. By the time I walked from my car to my office, out of breath again. And one of my colleagues said, you know, you might want to go and, you know, just get yourself checked out, you know, because coronavirus, one of the symptoms is shortness of breath. So I'm like, okay, well, let me go. don't feel like that's what's going on, but let me go and see. And so I went to the doctor's office, and they started running their tests, and the more tests they ran, the more they kept coming back saying, well, we need to retake this test. And then when she came back in the last time, she was like, hey, I think we need to send you over to the ER because I'm just not liking what I'm seeing on these test results. So I'm like, okay, well, great. I'll just drive over there. And she was like, no, we need to call an EMS for you. So they called the EMS, and I'm on the way to the ER, and I got to the ER, and they're running their tests, and doctors are coming in and out. No one's saying anything to me at the moment. And so I called my sister and was like, hey, just let you know I'm in the emergency room. They're running some tests and don't know what's going on, but everything is okay. And another doctor came in and was like, okay, he's my patient. And she was from the ICU. And so now I'm being wheeled off the ICU and still no one is telling me anything. So now I'm in ICU and they're running these tests down here and running more tests. And another doctor came in. And then they reeled me down to the cardiovascular unit at the ICU. And then he began to talk to me and tell me about this procedure that he was going to do, this emergency procedure. And that's when I began to a tear just kind of just rolled down my face here. And that's when he realized, he was like, no one said anything to you? I'm like, I still don't know what's going on. And he told me, you have massive blood clots that's covering the right side of your heart and in your lungs. He said, in all my years of doing this, I've never explained what I'm about to do to a patient before surgery. Because usually they come in here after having a stroke or a massive heart attack. And if they survived, I tell them what I did after. And that's when it was just an eye-opening moment for me. Because I was stuck in the bed, could not move for 24 hours and after surgery, and been in the bed, couldn't walk for weeks after because they found blood clots down the length of my left leg. And during that time is when I would say God slowed me down enough that even if I didn't know what to say, it wasn't about me saying anything. It was about me listening. And I had to hear and listen to who I was. I had to listen and see myself in the mirror of who I was no longer, who I no longer was. And he wanted to show me that because he was like, you're not going to be that person. That's not no longer who you are. But you need to see what you've done. Because you have work to do. But it's not just what you're getting paid to do at your 9-to-5. It's the people in your life that you have this work to do. And I looked at my life and my relationship with my sisters. We grew up together, yes, indeed. But after we left home, I disconnected myself. My family members, my cousins, people I grew up with, because it was how I conditioned myself to deal with what I went through. So early in my military days, I left home at 17 and went into the military. And you're off at 17 and you're meeting people from all over the world. And once again, I'm from the country, you know, and so it's a whole lot that you think you know about this world that you really don't. And one night, meeting someone out with them, they were 33, young lady was 33 years old, and got into a situation where I was pinned down and raped in the hallway, in a stairwell.
Wow.
And realized that that's what was happening, because it wasn't like the violent thing that you would see on television or anything of that nature, but it wasn't something I agreed and wanted to do.
Right.
And so I never, those words never came across my mind, but the guilt and shame of it, the feelings of it did. And it affected me so much. Several months later, I'm like, you know, I got a baby out there, you know, all of these thoughts that a, you know, 18-year-old will be going through, and, you know, first experiences and all of this, it really bothered me. And I ended up, you know, I ended up being with the chaplaincy. And so once with the chaplaincy, you know, you started going to work, and now you're working with other soldiers and you're listening to their stories. And this was during Desert Storm. And these soldiers, you know, I was their outlet for them to talk about their experiences in combat, the things that they've seen, the things that they've had to do, and their families who are back home experiencing this. They would all come to the chaplaincy and would talk and talk, and you begin to absorb all of these soldiers' issues. And you have to give them, you have to replace that with yours, your energy. You have to replace them and make sure that when they leave full of something positive,
mm-hmm.
of something that's going to get them through. And you're there remaining empty with not only your problems, but you also now carrying theirs. And so you get to a point where as you become so numb to it, that masculinity that you were raised with begin to tell you, deal with it. You're not the first person. You're not the last person. You're not the first soldier to come in this office. You're not going to be the last soldier to come in this office. You're not the first soldier to go through that. You're not going to be the last soldier to go through that. It was never, hey, you're not alone. This
or,
is my
or that way. Interrupt for a second. Or have someone ask you, are you okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to be strong for everybody, and I get it. Taking in everything you got going on, plus you're taking in all everybody's stuff because it's energy. You know, you're taking it all in, and then now that's being weighed down. So your stuff is being, as you're being packed on with other people, your stuff is packed down to a point of suppression. You know, we suppress it because we have to deal with so many other things. So I commend it. You said a mouthful that I wanted to hit on. You know, when God finally gave you the call, and you when you got sick and you're having a panic attack, because time, you know, there are times when we take on so much. Let me tell you something, people. Your mental, physical, emotional, it will affect your spiritual. It will affect everything. And I just had this conversation with someone, but I said, people say that I'm such a strong person, but yes, I go through stuff too. And I hear you, Ron, and I'm like, gosh, you know, our story is not too much different, you know, except, you know, the male,
yeah.
Whatever. But the point is this, you know, people go through. And I tell people, be careful how you treat somebody. You could be the reason they may jump or the reason they decide not to jump. And that is a true statement, because mental illness is real, you all. PTSD. I know I suffer from that. PTSD, you know, so many things. And then having to be raped at such a young age, being from the country, I get it, you know, at such a young age, now you got to deal with that. You can't, honestly, you can't deal with that because you got so many other stuff that you have to do it. You know, I relate to you as being a workaholic because all I did was work, because I didn't have to deal with my reality of what was going on with me because I can't tell you what's wrong with me. How many of you all have done that? I have people coming on the Facebook Live. You know, how many people have gone through that where you just suppress? You wanna talk about it, but you don't know what to talk about. I remember telling someone years ago, they said, well, Chyna, I just want to help you. I said, you can't help me because I don't know what I need help. I don't know what I need help. And then I got
exactly.
to the point, as I lived longer, the congestive heart failure, the heart attack, the stroke, I had it all, you know, coming out of remission, you know, and I told people today, everything that came from unforgiveness, let me just leave it right there, because unforgiveness can branch out a whole bunch of different roots that you have. But I also realized that when I was molested and stuff, I cannot tell you about that kindergarten, third grade year. I can't tell you much about it because I've suppressed it so much, it's just in the back of my head. So I've got whatever I need to have reveal it and let me deal with it. Other than that, I can't tell you much, but that's how I dealt with it. It was a defense mechanism. And when I listen to you, I see the defense mechanism that we build for ourselves for our protection because we're going to try to protect us the best way we know how. And as a result, some things come out. And people just don't understand, like, why is he like that? Or why is he like that?
Yeah.
You know, not understanding, everybody has a story. Don't be so quick to judge because there's a reason for everything. Then you move on, you're going on, you're still going through life, still, and I'm hearing that it's still suppressed. You're just trying to do what you need to do to deal with it, to get your mindset around it. And now you start getting sick because that will happen. You know, eventually you can't suppress things but for so long before it hits ahead, and you're now going to have to be faced with it. I can't even imagine how you could have felt. One, you don't know why you're running out of breath. You know, you finally get to the hospital. Now everybody's doing this and they doing that. You like this. At first, you're like, okay, you know, I'm going to the hospital. I want to get checked out. I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
Now you see doctor number one, doctor number two. Wait a minute now. What's going on? And then I don't know what's going on. So that's another thing. I'm trying not to let my anxiety get the best of me, but I need to know what's going on. And then you get hit with a big whammy. You got blood clots in your heart and your lungs. And now they got to do emergency surgery. First of all, let's talk about the grace of God. How long were you, well, it's a rhetorical question. How long were you walking around with all of that and yet he still had you? Up until that point, he got you to that doctor, he got you in the hospital, and now, you know, all the running around, hustling, bustling, bobbing, weaving, now he said, I got you. Now I got your attention. Not saying that he purposely did this to you or anything like that, but he will allow situations, people. God will allow situations to happen to put you in a place. If you don't want to listen to him, you are going to listen to him, whether you want to do it voluntarily or involuntarily. And that's what I hear from you. You know, when you're in that hospital, you ain't got nowhere to go. You got to stay on your back because that's a delicate situation that you had. That's a very delicate situation. Take it.
And I think that's why I love the topic of this show is because of that same thing there that you just said. You know, what I found in that situation, and the doctor was like, this did not happen overnight.
Mm.
You didn't get into this condition overnight. This didn't just happen. And you're just now feeling this? You know,
exactly.
And so when by the grace of God, that moment and laying in that bed and you're thinking about the things that you thought were important, I realized that I was not in control.
Mm.
What I realized. And when I realized that, I understood then who was. Because it was only by God's grace I was still here.
So if I'm not in control and I allow God to be like he is, I can be free to be me.
That's right.
So now I am not afraid to talk about what I'm struggling with. I'm not afraid to say, yes, I'm diagnosed with PTSD. Yes, I suffer from depression. Yes, I was a person that never even believed in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was a person that never gave other people the time or attention that they may have needed from me. Yes, that's who I was. Because I was trying to be in control of everything that happened in my life, everyone that came into my life. Because if I can control those circumstances, I don't have to be hurt. I don't have to be vulnerable. I can keep this masculine manhood going on. I can keep this perception going on.
Mm-hmm.
But God is like, you're not in control. You have no control over any of this.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff was happening in your body, and you had no control over it. So I had that situation taught me that, yes, I could have been gone if I was still trying to control something that I had no control over.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I stopped trying to be in control, I can just focus on being free.
That's right.
Focus on
and
being free to be me.
Like that's right. What does that look like?
What that looks like for me now is being my authentic self allowing other people, in my space and in my life to be who they are. I don't try to change them. I don't try to judge them. I don't have to try to re-raise anybody. I allow them to be them and accept them for who they are. And that was something I had to learn how to do because I didn't know how to accept myself for who I was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to look in the mirror and see someone that was broken. I didn't know how to look in the mirror and see someone that has gone through, that has lost. I didn't know how to do that. But now I do. Because now when I look at that person in the mirror, I look at that person with grace. I look at that person with more mercy.
Yes.
I look at that person with forgiveness.
Yes.
I didn't know how to do that. And yes, I meet some people that when I talk to them now, sometimes they're, oh, you know how you do, Ron. Yep, I know how I used to. I appreciate that. I understand. Good talking to you. Let me talk to you later.
Yeah.
See, I ain't strong enough right now to keep continuing this conversation with you.
Exactly.
I ain't strong enough yet. I ain't got there yet. So I can't allow you to put no doubt in my mind.
Exactly.
But you have to separate yourself. You have to separate yourself and be okay separating yourself. You have to be okay to let that old life of yours die and nurture the new life that you have been given.
That's right.
Just because that old life died doesn't mean that everything that was with it was so bad. The stuff that's dying in that old life becomes nurturance, become compost. It becomes fertilizer for the new life that God has given you.
How about that?
And you grow from that. You use that as fertilizer, as strength.
That's right. That's right.
To become anew. You don't forget those things. You know, but they're coming. They're coming into your new life in a new. So those things of the past that used to hurt you because they were still, you allow those things to still be alive in your life. When you allow them to die, they become fertilizer for your new life.
I love that. They become fertilizer for your new life. I love that. You know, you're already starting on the next question I want to ask you. You know, I have people listening and they're just commenting like it's nobody's business. We have people from Cross listening, believe it or not. So But what I would like to say, we have men who are tuning in. And we have men that's going to catch this now, or they're catching it now, and you have some that's catching the replay. What nuggets of wisdom would you give or offer to men out there?
What I would say is the most difficult thing that I found, it was not necessarily being honest with everybody else, is being honest with myself.
Yeah.
And that's where it had to start. It had to start with me being honest with myself, my situation, what I've been through, in order to face them.
Mm.
I've lived in denial because I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be a man. I wanted to show that I was tough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay not to be all the time.
That's right.
It's okay if you made a mistake today in being the protector. It's okay. Mm-hmm. If your day wasn't filled of perfection, it's okay. And when we can say that to each other as men and let each other know that, hey, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a start.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I do meet brothers from the past, old classmates, so I do run into old folks, other people I've known that I haven't seen in a while, I ask that question, how are you doing, is a little bit more different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different now.
Mm-hmm.
It has some meaning behind it instead of just
That's
a
right.
general greeting. It's not a general greeting anymore.
Right.
Because I'm genuinely
no,
concerned
right.
about how are you doing. How is your mental
right.
health?
That's right.
Because I understand that you have children now. You might have a wife. You have a family. You have things that you're doing as men and trying to provide, trying to be strong for everybody. But it's okay to stop sometimes and say, hey, how are you doing? My brother, how are you doing?
That's right.
And when I told you about being honest with yourself, answer that question honestly. It's easy to say, oh, man, I'm good. Everything's all right. Because you don't want to talk about it. You don't
mm-hmm.
want to get into it. You don't want to look weak. You don't want to burden no one else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when you really know who your friends are. Because to your real friends, it's never a burden. It's a necessity. And your friends know that. Your real friends know that. It's
mm-hmm.
a necessity. So I need you to be
mm-hmm.
honest with me. Because I want to be honest with you when I tell you how I feel.
Mm.
I want to talk to you and tell you, hey, here's how my counseling is going. One of my brothers I grew up with, similar situation. And then talking to him, it was a moment where I just had to say, I love you. I love you. I know. I don't think you do. I said, I love you. And I kept saying it. And kept saying it. And then he broke.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was honest with himself.
Yeah.
He stopped lying, not to me, but to himself.
Yourself.
To say,
that's right.
I'm not okay. No, I'm not okay. Yes, I was afraid. Yes, this situation got me tore up. But then I was able to say, okay, hey, okay, listen, here is what helped me. We got to get some counseling here. We got to
mm-hmm.
get with people who don't know us,
mm-hmm.
who are skilled in their field to help us and talk about it. Talk through it so you can understand what it is you're feeling, because you can't move past it until you understand it. Now, you can carry it and still be confused, still be burdened,
mm-hmm.
but you can't put it down and move past until you understand it. So be honest with yourself is the place to start.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And people are so appreciative because they're chiming in and they're making their comments and stuff. And a couple of things I want to point out to people. There is no shame on getting help. There is no shame getting help, okay? You want to, your thing is you want to get better. And sometimes you have to go to a therapist. Sometimes you have to go to a counselor. Sometimes you have to do that. You just want a comfortable environment where you could just be authentically you. There's no shame in getting help. Don't ever feel like that because a lot of us grew up where, it was like a sin if you wanted to go to therapy and stuff. There is no sin in that. If there's no sin in wanting to see self-development. There's no sin of wanting to have a peace of mind. There's not. I just thank you, Ron, for just bringing those nuggets of wisdom and honestly keeping it real because people need to know and people gravitate to truth. And I am sure there are people who, I know a few that's on this podcast now, that can relate in so many ways. And I thank you. Now, I'm going to let you know now. I won't come back to you again because this is a part two because this is serious business because we have so many people that we're going through so much that they need that outlet. And they do need that outlet. They need to know that somebody cares. They need to know, hey, I went through that too. You know, that's what I love about having this platform, God blessing me with this platform, because it has just brought out so many things that people are just like, you know what, I really appreciate that, you know. So if anyone wanted to reach out to you, if there is a way to reach out to you, how would they do that?
They can absolutely reach out to me via email at l.ron.pringle@outlook.com or through Messenger on Facebook at L. Ron Pringle. LinkedIn, L. Ron Pringle, you can reach out to me through message on any one of those platforms.
Okay, so l.ron.pringle@outlook?
Yes.
Okay, not a problem. So, and then he mentioned about his Facebook page as well as L. Ron Pringle as well. So you have it. I'm going to put it on the screen. If you don't see it now, you'll definitely see it by the time this show ends. So with that being said, I'm going to say, thank you all for tuning in. I really appreciate you all being here. Ron, I really appreciate you being here more than you will ever know because you have helped so many people from this conversation right here. You really have. That's why I stated I'm going to have to invite you to come back because this is really good. You know, this is probably scratching the surface, but I thank you, and I thank everybody who's tuning in from by way of Blog Talk Radio and also the Facebook Live. You can always text if you know someone who can benefit from this or if you're just getting in, go back and listen to the show from the beginning. It is awesome and phenomenal, and just know you are not alone. I don't want anyone to ever go through it. I tell you all the time, I went through it in silence. Ron went through it in silence, but you are not alone. There, people are here, and all you got to do is extend, and the olive branch is out there. So as I continue my March Men Mayhem, I have two more shows, and then we're going to go into mental health next month, and I'm so excited for what God is doing, all the yokes that are being broken. But I want you to know, tune in next Sunday. But we want to thank Ron again. I want to thank you all for coming in. My name is Patina Kirkendall with Chronicles of a Favorite Woman. I love you, but God loves you more. I'll call you right back.